This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Madeline Swain. We're joined by John Pesutto. John, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning, Macca. Good morning, Madeline. Happy New Year to you and everyone listening. It's good to be back.
Good morning, John.
It is good to be back. How's January been for you, John? Have you, do you feel more positive? I mean, I think all of us feel more positive after January 20th with the kidnapped chimp leaving the building and Joe Biden. It is a great name for Trump, isn't it? The kidnapped chimp.
Well, we can now go back to normal, can't we? Whatever normal is. But we were getting quite used to the upheaval of the 4 years. It's just nice to be back to some normalcy. So I agree with that. But January's always an interesting year, I find, because I love the New Year period, not just because we have time off, but I love the kind of valedictory feel of the end of the year, the occasion to think about, the year that's passed, what we want to try and do in the following year. So it's a really important part of our lives, I think, that whole period. And if we didn't have the festive season, the New Year, we'd think of some reason to do that, because I do think it's a necessary part. But the thing about January that always gets me is it goes by so quickly. And you sort of think, geez, if every month goes by as quickly as this, we'll be around the end of the year before we know it. Do you find that?
Every time, and certainly once you've had children, it's every minute goes by so quickly. But I just want to take a moment to think about your word there of positive, Macca, because it's not always the positive word that we think it is anymore, is it? I mean, it's sort of loaded these days. If you think of the tennis players who weren't happy being and were being negative, and now they're not happy because they're positive. Do you know what I mean? So, we just got to think about what kind of positive we're talking about. The positive about the election, absolutely, I'm right. I'm bored with that one. Yeah.
And I think, John,
I'm positively confused.
Yeah, positively. And look, one of the, the things, John, is that, and you touched on it, certainly I feel better getting up in the morning and opening, turning my computer on or my phone on to look at what's happened overnight on news sites and all this sort of stuff, but not thinking, oh my God, what has the kidnapped chimp done now? Who has he attacked? Who's he slagged off? Who's he fired? No more. We no more have to, start our day with a bit of a Trump dump.
Yeah, look, I think there's a lot of relief around the world about all of that. But for my part, and I keep saying to people in conversations I've been having over recent days that, Trump wasn't the start of dysfunction.
But oh, no.
But kind of like the apogee. And so the sooner we put him to the, to the footnotes and his presidency to the footnotes, not that look, some of the things he did in the foreign policy space you can't all say about, and Biden, I think we'll probably adopt some of those things and a few other measures. But by and large, we move on from that, and the sooner we do, the better. And it doesn't mean that America doesn't still face those huge challenges. It does. How it's going to deal on trade and other issues with China, for one. How it's going to continue the process of reconciliation in the Middle East is another one. So there's a whole range of enormous challenges, as we know, that they're going to face. And Trump didn't create them, but he did kind of shake us out of that kind of, inertia in dealing with some of these things, I think.
I mean, people have talked about how they're looking forward to being bored by American politics again, but the way he started, it hasn't been boring at all, has it? I mean, signing, was it 17 executive orders on the first day? It's like wham-bam in there, but there's a difference between being again, positive and doing things, sort of taking action and taking action that, as you say, Michael, makes you think, oh, my God, what's happened now?
Yeah, and John, have you got a radio on in the background, John?
No, I might still have your app on, because I normally have your app on. Is that somehow interfering?
Yeah, just it's sort of echoing a bit. No, yeah, so if you can just tune out of that. I wanted to ask you...
I think that's off now.
Cool. Look, a couple of things I wanted to cover, John. Political donations. This is, and you know, having been a Member of Parliament and having to fundraise, you know, both your own election and the election of your party, you know, I don't need you, you know, you don't need to tell us how important that is for being able to become elected. But it's a two-edged sword, isn't it? Because when people donate money to a political party, why do you think they do it, John? And what do you think they expect?
I genuinely believe that most people do donate generally to express support. They're not looking for a specific quid pro quo. Now, that's not to say that there are donors around the world, including here in Australia, who donate expecting something. That's only to be assumed, that there'll be an element of that always. I don't think most donors to political parties expect some specific quid pro quo. So I think for the most part, the system operates on the basis that people just want to be seen to be a part of something, generally. But I do support campaign laws that really crack down on donations and make sure that there are no quid pro quos. My own view on quid pro quos and donations is that you'll be surprised, you know, in being in politics a long time, you see a lot of things. There's probably more likelihood that a donor who makes a smaller donation expects a quid pro quo than someone who makes a larger donation. It's an interesting interesting analysis in why some people give. It is true that there is an element that would do that, but you're silly if you do. The other thing I've also observed over the years is that quid pro quos don't only depend on campaign donations. At the end of the day, the biggest and most secure safeguard you can have around integrity and probity in your politicians and in political processes is the character of the people going into politics itself, because there can be, and I say this as someone who's not only been involved in politics but looked at governance issues in the law and all range and manner of occasions when people who have responsibilities are overborne by other considerations, is that whether it's a friendship, right, whether it's some kind of non-financial form of blackmail, whether it is a financial inducement, these things can happen. So for our political process and the success of that system, its regard in the public, you do have to deal with campaign finance thresholds and safeguards, but you also have to look more broadly at what influences there are on decision makers. I know that's a long answer, but what I'm trying to say is that there are financial and non-financial considerations that can impact upon the decision-making by politicians and ministers.
I think, John... No, Madeline, please.
I just want to ask, John, do you think... I mean, talking about those donations there, can you differentiate between individuals who make donations and organisations, and if there would be more of an expectation of quid pro quo if it's from an organisation, perhaps?
Yeah, look, that's a very interesting question, because you know, when you look at large organisations in particular, they typically will have a policy, and many in recent years have pulled out altogether, but they will have a policy where they'll give equally or nearly equally to both sides of politics. And I say both sides with no disrespect to people who think more independently of political parties, the major political parties, but they're giving to both sides. So I've always been curious about that. Why give it all? If you're giving to both sides. With individuals, I think for the most part, unless you're talking about a donor who is already animated by corrupting influences, most individuals are pretty sensible in understanding that there's no way that an individual donation from them is going to result in a decision favourable to them. I think the bigger the bigger risk and the more likely it is, as probably at that corporate end. But again, why they're giving to both sides, I've never quite understood when you're better off just saying, look, we have a complete neutrality policy on donations, we're not going to give it. It's almost like the worst of both worlds. When you're giving equally to both sides, you might as well not give anything.
Mm, not hedging their bets.
And I think, John, you know, in my experience, having observed this over many years, the overwhelming majority of donations by individuals, and we're talking amounts that are at or just below the threshold, which in council elections I think is $500. I think in the state elections I think is it $1,000, John? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that they're actually donating to actually show support for that particular person. Now, whilst they donate to, you know, in the case of the major parties, to the major party, but they can indicate if they would like that money spent in the campaign of a particular member. If you donate to an independent as such, that the difference there is it's actually tax deductible, which I think is quite nice. A previous president of the Liberal Party in Victoria, Michael Kroger, has said on air on more than one occasion to us, he supports complete public funding of elections and campaigning to remove donations from the equation altogether. What's your view on that?
Yeah, there's a lot of force in that argument. I'm not, I'm certainly not averse to that argument. And I think the more you can do to take that out of the system, the risk of that kind of influence in the system, the better. The only thing I'd say in addition is that I do support, I'll make 2 points here, I support the freedom of people to want to donate if they wish to. And part of that is that most donations are quite innocent. It's MP, including people like myself when I was in, you'd say to somebody, look, I've got a dinner coming up, could you please come? I really need help. That's why it comes. So they'll often do it. People will often support you because of a personal relationship. Mm. Nothing more than just, oh, look, okay, I'll come to this dinner. And it might be an expensive dinner. So you'll ask them to do that. So there's that issue, kind of a what I'd call a freedom of speech issue. The other thing I'd say is that I've always taken the view that in terms of campaign caps and limits, we have a law in Victoria now which caps them, so the issue's kind of been resolved. But my own view has been that any kind of quid pro quo should be illegal. Yeah. So that no donation, whether it's $5 or $500,000, should be legal if there's a quid pro quo attached, whether it's explicit or whether it's to be implied from the circumstances. So but they're the only other observations I'd make. But I'd agree with Mike in the sense that the more you can take that risk of influencing the system out, the better, certainly.
Yeah. You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9 with Macca and Madeline. John Posito is with us. Now, John, Conversion Practices Bill.
Yeah.
It's coming to the upper house near us. The position of your party is unclear. Now, I know you're not a member of the parliamentary party, but I'm sure you speak with your colleagues there. It's a couple of weeks away. We don't know what the position is. Can you enlighten us a little bit?
Yeah, my understanding from discussions I've had with various members is that the bill will be overwhelmingly supported. I'm not sure whether the party at this point is going with its traditional conscience vote position on bills of this nature. As you know, we have a tradition of a conscience vote, so I can't say what every member's going to do, but I think overwhelmingly there's support for the bill. And the way I describe it, and it's certainly my view, is that the bill's a good bill. I describe it as 99% of it or 99.9% of it's fine. There's just a couple of aspects which hopefully the government might just look at and double check before it proceeds. And when I say that kind of 0.1%, if you like, that small component of the bill really only relates to the application of the 10-year jail sentences for prayer-related activity. Now, I'm not saying that prayer-related activity should be excluded altogether, but there are fairly severe jail terms for prayer-based stuff. And I do think the government would be better off looking at that just before it presses go, finally, to pass it through the bill. But as I said, 99% of it's fine and necessary.
John, we've just had an email in with a question for you. Somebody saying hi, yeah. That's Melina Smith, and she also wants to know what you think of Kamala Harris, which is nothing to do with yes. Conversion practices, but can you answer that?
Kamala, I think it's a great achievement for not only Vice President Harris, but for people who, I guess, have a background, a minority background. I think it's quite an inspirational story, in the same way that President Obama's election as president was very inspirational for many. And we've got to remember that for many people who come from what I'd call a minority background or a background of disadvantage, stories like this are quite inspirational because they tell you that anything is possible, and they have long-lasting impacts on the lives, not just of Americans, but from people around the world. And, you know, when I started out in politics, I didn't have many, people I could look to as success stories who came from a migrant background, you know, particularly an Italian background, going into public life and making their way through. And as it turns out, we live in a country where that mobility is indeed possible. And I think we have one of the most accessible democracies in the world. It's not perfect, and we've always got to keep working to improve it. But Vice President Harris will be a great inspiration. As to how they'll govern, we'll have to wait and see how that happens. And I'm not typically a Democrat supporter. I would like to see, with Trump in the past, hopefully, some new and modern-focused Republicans come through. But that said, I'm very happy to see someone like Vice President Harris come through and be an inspiration for many people around the world.
Well, Melina agrees with you very much about the diversity of the happening in America at the moment. She says she was thoroughly impressed by Amanda Gordon, who reciting the poem she did. And also wanted to acknowledge the appointment of Pete Buttigieg as a gay man and a future president as well, she reckons. Their administration truly reflects a multicultural America, she says. But she also says, which isn't quite as complimentary for us, she said, as one way of recommending getting some sleep, I think this was to me, she said, is watching our own parliament. Thanks for that,
Madeline. I was worried, Madeline. I was worried that she was going to say to listen to a podcast of my segment with you.
People are very aware. I wonder, John, and just before we come back to the conversion bill, that you know, Kamala Harris is a previous Californian Attorney General and also a prosecutor. So she brings a very legal mind and framework to her role, not just as vice president, but as president of the Senate in the United States. So how they deal with this impeachment proposal, that's coming from the House of Reps to the Senate, I think it's going to be really interesting. Let's assume, for the sake of discussion, that it's legal. I believe it is, to impeach a person who's no longer president. But the interesting thing is that all that is required, well, what's required for that is, I think it's 60% of the Senate need to vote for that, but it only needs to be a simple majority if the Senate moves a motion to bar Donald Trump from further elected federal office. Do you have a thought on that? Do you think this is one way to get the chimp out altogether?
No, I wouldn't support, just as an observer from far away, I wouldn't support that, because what I would support is a process which can be defended on its own merits as a necessary legal step. So in other words, I actually do support an impeachment process in the Senate, because I think what happened on the Capitol was I don't think anyone can sensibly deny, incited by the former president. I don't think you can look at his words and say that they weren't a primary or the predominant cause of what ultimately entailed.
Absolutely.
And you can at least defend that to say that the American democracy and its place in world affairs is so important that no one can get away with it, in other words, with impunity, of engaged in misconduct. What I'm uncomfortable about regarding a motion to disallow somebody from simply running again without more is that, well, what criteria governed the exercise of that process? If somebody came along and picked out a Democrat and said, well, we've got a majority in the Senate, let's just use that majority to stop. So that's where I start to get very uncomfortable with the processes. And, you know, it can't just be when it comes to momentous questions like this. I don't think it can simply come down to who's got a majority, and if you've got a simple majority, just flaunt it, because I think that's a recipe for ongoing disruption and dysfunction in the system. But I do think action does need to be taken. And, yeah, we live in the real world, and sometimes I can get the argument from some people who say, with some merit, who say, oh, look, the impact on unity across the country will be too much if we launch an impeachment process. And I get that, because sometimes being right isn't enough, right? Because sometimes you do have to think about the impacts. But that said, I still think what happened is so important and so egregious that you do need to take some step. And that's why I support impeachment. But I wouldn't support, so it's a long answer, but I wouldn't support just a simple majority saying Donald Trump can't run again. That's it. I hope he doesn't run again.
I think Nancy Pelosi nailed it when she said it's not a case of, oh, in the last month of your presidency, you can do what you want and get away with it.
I agree with that.
And look, you know, he does need to be held to account. And, you know, the process is very important. And the Senate, you know, just like, you know, parliaments, you know, in Australia, they have procedures, you know, they have customs. And at the end of the day, those elected officials who, when they vote, make a decision, you know, not just on what they feel, but on the facts, but also with an eye to the future in terms of the impact on their own re-electability, but also on whether or not, you know, this has implications. You know, when the Republicans changed the filibuster rule in the Senate in the US, that was, you know, to work against, you know, the Democrats. Now, you know, if the Democrats change it back, that will be because they can then use it to work against the Republicans. So often parliamentary procedure is used, you know, to stifle debate. But at the end of the day, I come down very firmly, if there isn't sufficient vote to impeach, I still believe the Senate has the right, and I think the duty, to stop Donald Trump from standing for elected office again. I make an exception. I understand the implications of that, but I think he's been such an egregious president. America cannot afford to have him as president again.
Yeah, I could never go that far. I do think, as I said, that the impeachment process is necessary, and I think the Democrats in particular, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, do have to, and I'm not sure they can do this, and certainly can't resist doing it, but they need to extra Republican votes, and there have been obviously news reports from people such as former Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who appear to be open to the question, and they need, I think it's 10 votes, or it might be more than that, I think, 17, to get it across. If that were to happen, then it would demonstrate that the Congress as a whole and the Republican Party, too, which I want to see do this, is going to say, no, we're not going to have our name attached to that kind of thing historically. Now, it's already suffered enough, but I do support that. But if Congress is simply going to use its majority, then watch out. This will happen repeatedly in the future. And it's going to take a lot of courage from the Senate leadership and the House leadership now to resist that kind of urging. No doubt that they'll receive from the Democratic caucus, but I think it would be an unwise step if they were to take it. And it may well be that Trump has salted the earth anyway for him and his children anyway going forward because of this final period. Certainly the Suns, who were very vocal, and even Ivanka by almost her silence, I think will find it very difficult to run, but that's not to say they won't try, right?
Mm.
I'd like to talk a bit more about that idea of impact. We saw that on the day of the inauguration, there was so much preparation for possible trouble, and then we saw all those pictures of demonstrations where there were one or two people standing there, Trump supporters, with their flags. So, and there's been a lot of talk on the really far-right websites and chat rooms of QAnon supporters that were expecting this great storm to happen. It didn't happen, and now they feel, it was a big fraud. It's all vanished into thin air. We've been duped. And there's a bit of that sort of feeling. So maybe that impact isn't quite as dramatic as we fear it might be. And I think with the in the Senate, a lot does hinge on Mitch McConnell and the way that he decides to
go. Do you reckon, John, Mitch McConnell, and I mean, you're a student of politics, and do you think Mitch McConnell is leaning towards voting for impeachment?
Certainly he's let that drop, hasn't he? And obviously, probably not himself, but he's allowed his staff or colleagues, whoever it is, to brief that that's what he's leaning towards. And it certainly makes a lot of sense. Who knows whether he ultimately does that or not? But I think the Republican Party does need to break with its recent past. And I want it to. I want it to be successful. And the only way to do that, I think, is to break with the past. But in order to secure that Republican support, as I said, the process itself needs to be one where everybody can point to it and say, well, look, this isn't an abuse of a majority. This is a legitimate process that's come forward. It's governed according to long-standing principles and conventions and laws. And that's how we govern in this country, rather than the very thing that we've seen in the 4 years that's concerned us in many ways. So as long as that's done, that possibility of Republican support. Remember, some very senior Republicans have made comments suggesting that, you know, even though they might not be in the Senate, like, for instance, Liz Cheney, her comments were scathing.
Yes.
I think pretty much on the mark. I think she's been quoted by Republicans and Democrats alike. Because not only does this do a great injustice to America's political system, but I think smart Republicans know that it's done enormous damage to the party, enormous.
Mm.
And this is the way to break free. So I hope those reports are right. But again, it's got to be a process that is sound, robust, and governed according to law.
Yeah. Just quickly, John, I want you to encourage your colleagues in the Parliamentary Party to actually speak to, and we've actually got David Davis on next week, we'll be asking him, but to actually inform the public about what their position is on the Conversion Practices Bill. I've messaged another colleague of yours, Georgie Crozier, a number of times. Nothing. Crickets. My community wants to know what your party's position is, and we don't want to read about it the next day in the paper. We'd actually like to know before. So I encourage you, some of them will be listening, but I encourage you to speak to them about this, to actually engage and tell us what the position is, because we actually don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, look, I'm very happy to do that. I do think there's some comments on the record that sort of echo what I was saying before, that overwhelmingly there's a lot of support. There's just a couple of minor issues, but I'll do that.
Yep.
I'll take to do that for you. And want to make sure. But David will be pretty good next week, I'm sure.
Oh, look, it's always. As you know, David and I often have very robust offline debates, which is great. I want to leave you,
but
John.
But he's always on, right? He's always on.
No, he comes back. I pay him full credit for that. He comes back. And that's to his, that's to his credit. So, I don't deny it. I want to leave you, John, with the word, not just perhaps of the week, but the word of the month. It's an old English word, and it's an old English word that is used to describe, not you, used to describe a dishonest politician, and the word is snollygoster. And it's spelled snollygoster. So there you go. Get to use it sometime. Snollygoster.
Will do.
Okay.
Good to join you.
Thanks again, John, and we look forward very soon. We're going to have you back in the studio. We're actually going to get, you know, some of our regular political guests in the studio have a bit of a shit fight, I reckon.
Oh, nothing better, right? Nothing better to warm up your Saturday morning.
That's right. Okay, thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks John.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.